Follow up on what Gita said. I'm not here to tell you my way of doing it because I don't have a way. I went to Dallas and learned from people, like I said last night, who have been doing this for a long time. And I continue to go back to Dallas when I have questions, because when I came in the rooms in 1990, I was making it up as I went along. I was telling other people how to live their lives. I was telling them how to feed their bodies. I was telling them how to do all kinds of things that I didn't know how to do for myself. But I was making, if they asked me a question, I made up an answer to go with it. And it's scary to look back. But that's I was doing my best, and I was doing it with good intentions. But we can kill people with good intentions. So this is not my way. This is my best understanding of what I've been taught and what's in the book and how I've been shown to do it. Before I get into sponsoring and steps in the foundation meeting, the first conversation, I just want to clean up a couple things from last night, following up with some feedback that I got in conversations. Somebody said that it would be a good idea to tell why I went to Dallas. And as Gita was saying, it's the same reason I went, because I was one desperate compulsive eater. It was either die or find the way. And when I found this group of people, I went to Dallas to see how they did it, to ask all kinds of questions. And I went down for their anniversary celebration. And it's the first time, that was, 2007, when I went down to Dallas, and I had been in the rooms starting in 1990, and I had never seen this before. And I'd been to the national conventions in the States and been with lots and lots of OA people, but when I went down to Dallas, there were 200 people in the room. And when they asked who was available to sponsor, nearly every person stood up. They weren't worried about, let me see, I already have three protege or three sponsees, and, you know, I don't have room, I don't have time. They were all available to sponsor, except for maybe five, and those were the newcomers. They were brand new, first meeting, or hadn't been in there for more than a couple of days. And when you looked at these people, the light was on in their eyes. Their faces glowed. They smiled. They were happy. Their interactions were just, they were alive and bubbling, and it was great. And I had never seen that. I was used to being in my OA rooms where people were mad and glum, and, you know, if you look, you know, if you had my life, you'd know why I was eating, and, you know, or I was binging on abstinent food. It wasn't, at least it wasn't sugar, wheat, flour, you know, that kind of stuff. And I learned a lot. And I learned that, you know, there's more than just staying away from sugar, flour, wheat, or just losing 5 pounds, or just following the directions for the sake of the directions. There's recovery for the sake of living. And one of the things that I said last night was that my life was completely changed. So Gita suggested that maybe I tell you a little bit of how it's changed. Because it's real easy to go around and say, oh, look at me, I'm happy, joyous, and free. I was in a marriage from the time, I was in a relationship from the time I was 18. We got married 7 years later, and I was married for 25 years. The whole time trying to figure out how to get out of that marriage, because I didn't even like him. But I wanted to get married and have kids, because that's what you're supposed to do. So I did. And if I just try harder, do more, we'll have, you know, I can make this work. I can make it work. I know I can. There's those good intentions. Well, let me tell you what those good intentions did to my three kids. It's okay to cry.
It is.
In college, I studied psychology and human development and child development, and I knew how I wanted to raise my kids. It wasn't the way my parents raised us. I love my parents. I had a good home. My mom was a screamer. I learned how to scream. I raged at my kids. I wasn't, and I tell them while I was screaming at them that they didn't deserve to be treated that way. There were a lot of good things. My kids weren't in line to be taken from me, but I could have told you that they were. And they didn't deserve what I gave them. My youngest child, I never had a relationship with because she was always daddy's girl. Her brother, who was in the middle, was her protector and shielded her from me. The two of them were temper tantrum throwers, and it didn't make any sense to me. As I'm telling you that I'm raging, I wanted to be logical. I wanted to talk things out. I wanted to be the person that I believed I could be. I knew I wanted to be. I knew how to be, but I couldn't do it. I screamed at them, and I reacted to them, and they reacted to me, and it was ugly. It took 2 years for my youngest to hear my amends, because I couldn't be with her for 10 minutes without her screaming at me and telling me she wished I were dead and cussing me out and telling me how horrible a mother I was. And she was right. She was right. The way my life has changed today is that I finally figured out how to get out of the marriage. I did some crazy things in relationships along the way. I swore off relationships because by this time I've blown it with a man, I've blown it with a woman, I'm not going to be in any relationships. That was my plan. And after 2 years, my daughter and I were walking around a store. I need to get tissues, I'm sorry. Oh, thanks. And I had an opportunity to make amends, and I did, and I said what I needed to say, and then I shut up and listened, and she had a lot to say. She had a whole lot to say, and it wasn't easy to listen to. Thank you. And I listened, and she told me she needed for her mother to be a safe place for her to talk. And when she came to talk to me, she didn't need me to fix her or solve things or tell her what to do. She just needed me to listen unless she asked. I learned how to clamp my teeth down on my tongue and my cheeks and pray before I ever opened my mouth when she talked to me. And to this day, I still make sure that I'm not offering parental advice when it's not solicited, that I'm listening, and we get along great. It's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. It's a joy. So those relationships that I swore I'd never be in again, I've been with my partner for 10 years. I had to be told that a friend was staying with me once, and I was on the phone with Diane, my partner, who was just a friend that somebody had introduced. I didn't know that this mutual friend of ours was fixing us up. It took me a year. You know, we saw each other, and every time I left her, maybe four times that first year, I was like, I didn't recognize whatever that was about. And I was talking to Diane one night with a friend there visiting me, and when I hung up the phone, she said, "Who were you talking to?" And I told her. And she said, "Well, you were flirting." And I just looked at her like, "What are you talking about?" And I thought about it, and it's like, so that's what that was every time I left. I had lived my life so much in my head that I didn't know what was going on in my heart. And I can also tell you, as I told Gita, that I have this idea of what an ideal relationship is. You know, there are certain things you do and there are certain things they do, and y'all live happily ever after, and that's not what this looks like. It's very, very different, and it's perfect. It's perfect. It's the relationship that I'm not going to be in. It's 10 years now, and I'm blessed. I can go on with stories about the work that I'm doing and other things in my life, but I think those are kind of indicative of the way my life has changed, and it's only a result of living this way of life and following directions, and not because I'm virtuous, because I'm desperate, because I won't go back to the way I told you it was before, I would have to shoot myself, slice my wrist, or find a way out because I can't go back to that hell. I cannot. I won't. And so on days when I don't want to take another phone call, I don't want to talk to another person, I don't want to pray another prayer, I stomp my feet like a two-year-old, have my little temper tantrum, and I say, okay, God, I ask only for knowledge of your will and the power to carry it out. I'll do it because that's my only option. Not because, gee, isn't it nice to live this way? It's because I'm desperate. And I'm here for the same reason, because I need you guys. And I went to Dallas for the same reason. So, I think I said, if you have any questions, bring them in this morning. Did anybody have anything they needed to clean up before we go on this morning? Yes.
Can I ask some questions?
Great.
Well, the thing is, something I have noticed in myself and some other people is like the actor that's described in the big book, like doing everything for the, with the good intentions and motives, and then on a completely selfish basis, I can be working my 12-step program like that.
Yes.
And what do you do about that, and how do you, like, how do you notice it when that happens? Because sometimes I can be doing it for a while before I notice.
It's funny because as you started to talk, I remembered something that I wanted to say that I hadn't written down in my notes. I think it comes with practice. I think it comes with seeing that that's what I'm doing, and it comes with rigorous honesty. And it's taken a long time for me to get from the place where I need to present as somebody that's got it all together and, you know, I'm working this perfect program and I have this perfect life. And mind you, in my perfect, wonderful, blessed life, stuff happens, but that's real. You know, it's not, and I'll tell you that. I'll tell you, you know, life isn't perfect by some outside design or idea what perfect looks like. It's perfect because it's my life. It's mine, and I get to live and learn every day and practice the principles. One of the things that I needed to do to get beyond that, look at me, Miss OA, was get honest with my peers. I'm just another bozo on the bus, as we like to say. I'm just another desperate OA. I'm not special. I only went to Dallas because I was so desperate. So maybe I'm sicker than all of you. I don't know. It doesn't really make any difference. But it's not because I'm better, for sure. It's not because I'm better. It's because that's what I needed. That's why Gita went all over the place trying to find the solution. I knew it was out there. I knew it was out there. It had to be, because God wouldn't put me on this planet without a solution. I know that. I don't know how I knew that or why I knew that, because I wasn't such a strong believer. But I just knew there had to be something better than what I was living. So in terms of you know, the phrase in the book that goes through my head, and it's around page 59, 60. I'm off pages today. And, oh, you know why? I know why, because the Danish pages are different. It doesn't matter if I quote pages, because you guys aren't reading the same pages. Okay, I don't feel so bad. But one of the things the book says is, even when our motives are good. And a lot of times my motives were, I want you to see this work. I want you to know that it really does work, so that you'll come along with me and we can join hands. Yes.
I would like to comment on that, because I've, and that's why I was kind of desperate, because I've been controlling sponsees, and I have some very rough edges, some people things, and yeah, trying to control and tell them what to do. I totally admit that. And I need to learn how to do it, and I have my issues that I have to work with, but The difference today is that I can say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have all that pride that I had before. I really know that perfect OA person. I've tried to be that for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, just getting honest and, you know, sitting in a room full of people like this and say, you know, I'm doing it again. That's, I've been on the phone with people and hear myself talking and said, wait a minute, let me start over because that's bullshit. I'm sorry, excuse my English. but, you know, I've said, that's just not true. That's the story I've woven, you know, and we got to tear down that story and just be real. Rigorous honesty. And it doesn't happen overnight.
My experience is when I'm honest totally, also about my dark sides, it helps other people to to have the same honesty. And that's what I really love by our fellowship, that says, okay, this and this isn't so great. Oh, isn't it? Why is that? And, yeah, it's very different and very special for us. And what it had given me is that it affects the way I have relationships today, because I've learned that in these rooms, so it works outside the rooms also.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me whole way different relationships, not keeping up this facade being perfect.
It's a kind of related question, and I think it's maybe more common, like, this is also around my eating. Like, I can be really perfectionistic about it, and I think that I know what God's will is, and this is gonna look like this, and it's gonna, like, not a pee too much, and not a, like, I was eating too little for a while, because I thought that it must be God's will to eat this way. Yeah, and how do you deal with that?
Remember I came up with Joni's implementation. I asked for knowledge of God's will, and then I come up with Joni's implementation plan. How am I going to make it happen? And, you know, and I still slip into that. And so the people that I talk to all the time, they've heard me say it so much that they can say, hey, whose plan is that? Is that your plan or God's plan? Oh, yeah. You know, I asked for knowledge of His will, and God tells me what to do now. He doesn't tell me what to do for the next 38 years. And so a lot of that, it's really hard, which is why I absolutely know in my gut that we need to talk about food and eating. Not as part of the solution, not as a way of controlling compulsive eating, but once the problem is removed as the result of the steps, we got to figure out how to feed ourselves, because we've got old ideas. And the book tells us the results are nil until we let go our old ideas absolutely. And I know there are a lot of people who say, we don't talk about food and eating. That's between you and God. Well, it's true. God directs us. It is true. It's up to Him. But people give us information that, you know, if I don't know any better, what's the difference between McDonald's and, you know, good hamburger and fries, or, you know, or a salad or whatever. I mean, good food and processed junk. You know, if I don't know, if somebody doesn't teach me that, I don't know the difference between a potato and a potato chip, or an apple and an apple pie. It's all just the same stuff. So we need information about nutrition, about ourselves personally, what works for us. If we're diabetic, we need to know how to control, you know, how to eat to help heal or help maintain or control that problem. Whatever it is, you know, we need to know if we have inflammation. You know, there are certain foods that are inflammatory. That's all information. In terms of how much, we need to learn that we're animals. We're human animals. Animals eat and they stop when they're done. If we're not eating compulsively, you know what? We do the same thing. We're just some other form of creature. We eat and we stop when we're done, when the reason for eating is to just nourish our bodies, to fuel ourselves for energy. If I'm eating to control my weight, I'll stop too early. If I'm if I've given up on that because it's not working, then I'll stop too late. If I'm not paying attention to what I'm doing and I'm just eating because I'm angry, or eating because I haven't done a 10th step or something, I'm going to eat very differently than if I'm just eating because I'm putting gas in the gas tank. And that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy my food. I eat really good food and I enjoy what I eat. I used to hear in the rooms that if I can't eat something if I like it too much, or, you know, if it tastes good, I can't eat it. It's just got, you know, so I might only be eating cardboard by the time I'm done because it's the only thing that doesn't have any taste or flavor, or, you know, it doesn't taste good. But so it was really hard for me. I started doing it after I started living in 10, 11, and 12 to go back then and learn how to practice the principles around eating. And we have a fellowship meeting that I know some of you have been to on the phone on Wednesday mornings at 7 a.m. Eastern time. So it's 1 o'clock here. And some of you have been there. And one of the things that we have started doing probably this past year is talking about, well, how do we eat? What do I do when somebody comes and tells me they eat a cookie? Well, you know, why are you telling me that? You don't come and tell me when you eat a string bean. You don't come and tell me when, you know, what is it about the cookie? Well, it's the old ideas in there for one thing. You know, a cookie's bad. So why'd you eat it? I wanted it. Maybe there's something we need to look at in the motivation, not in the cookie, in the motivation. If you look at your motivation, that cookie may not happen. Or maybe it will. I don't know. Maybe the green bean won't happen if you look at your motivation. But it's learning how to not confess after, you know, you kick the dog or eat the cookie. It's looking at the 10th step is watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear as it crops up. You know, I have that feeling, you know, it's kind of like that bristling up the back of your neck. It's like, we're heading for, you know, I'm going to start fighting the world. And I know as soon as I start feeling that it's like, all right, God, you know, it's like flipping a light switch. I can connect with God that quickly. It doesn't mean I have to have an hour to go sit in a particular place in a particular posture with music on and candles lit to spend an hour with God in order to have time to connect. I need to be in constant conscious contact. And if I'm in constant conscious contact, then no matter what's going on, it's like, all right, God, what do I do now? Does that answer? Okay. Sometimes I can go off on a tangent. Feel free to say, hey, reel me back in. Joni, come back. Yes?
Now I've got three questions.
Oh, okay.
Your definition of God as in the last part of the third step, as we understood God, I've been hearing different ways. I can try to make my own definition and try to write down my God is caring, my God is so. And also heard somebody say, you make the decision, period. Don't think about the understanding. That will come sooner in your life or sooner in the steps. And now you're telling me you just can switch on and off your connection to God? Oh my God, how do you
do that? Okay, I know I've been in rooms where people spend years on the second step defining their concept of God. The book doesn't tell us. We made a decision to turn our will and our life over. The second step is only hope. If you have hope that what worked for me will work for you, the book tells us that God will reveal himself to us. It tells us that we'll find God deep down within. I really don't care what your concept of God is. And you know why? Because I don't care what my concept of God is. I don't have a concept of God. I don't have a concept of God. Gita?
Maybe the different at least it was for me, I'm not to understand God, I'm to experience.
Yes.
It's an experience, yes. Not understanding, because that's beyond my...
Right, right.
Yeah.
I don't have to, you know, draw a picture and, you know, believe anything. And I can tell you the closest I have to a concept of God. The day I did a four-step, when I was in the traditional rooms right away, because I was told to do the steps, I did. I walked away. You see where my hands go when I start talking about this. I walked away knowing that God was with me, almost like a cloak. Can't see him? No, he's there. Can't feel him? No, he's there. I just know, and I use he as a generic term. I don't know whether God's male, female, it doesn't matter. I just know that God is with me. If I start talking about love, I'll go like this. If I start talking about God, I go, it's an international symbol, I think. And that was in 90 maybe. And that's a long time ago. And I have no more of a concept of God today than I did then. I just know God's with me. And I know when I stop and I listen, I hear. I know in my gut that, you know, whatever it is that I need to know, I don't take any time trying to figure it out, because I can't figure it out. Once I go into my head, you know, it's story's over. But I know I can connect, just like flicking a light switch. God's always there. When I say, all right, God, I get what I need. Don't know how.
Congrats.
I just know that it's not because I did anything special. I just did what it said in the book. And when I do that, the promises that are not just the 10-step, that are all throughout the book, come true. How can that happen? It's magic. It's like the tea carafe that opens up. It's, you know, and it doesn't matter. It works. And it works in other people, too. That's all I got. No concept. You want?
Yes. That was one of my questions.
Okay.
And then you were talking about the food. Mentioned it at meetings, people talk about it. Do you then, at meetings, some people at meetings talk about what they did, including myself. Yesterday I ate that specific food. Because of this feeling or whatever. So, talking about the food at meeting, as far as I understand the primary purpose, you don't talk about that. Do you then quote the book, reading from the book at the meetings? Or, as I've been hearing, some of the primary purpose groups around the world, it's like you have the big book and then you read some sentences and then you answer questions, because that's what I've seen on the website when I'm going to Google the primary purpose. That's actually a manual like Cliff Bishop made.
Right,
so
right.
Are there different kind of primary purpose meetings?
Right, well, let me tell you what we did as a virtual group, because we weren't meeting face to face. Our Sunday night meeting is a big book study, exactly following the question answer format. We don't share about ourselves, we share experience and knowledge of what the book says. You know, I might have something written in the margin of the book that I heard, our southern friend, that's Fitz Mayo, you know, because I've learned this, and when, you know, we talk about it, you know, just a comment or something that I know that I've taken from the history, or, you know, what Cliff has passed down, that Joe has said some things about. So we're talking about the book. We're not talking about ourselves. Our Wednesday morning fellowship meeting, what we decided as a group was that we missed this fellowship of being face-to-face and talking to people before the meeting and after meeting. So we set up a time on the phone on Wednesdays where we can just talk. It's not an official OA meeting. It's just it's the parking lot where we sit and talk and, you know, talk about things we're wondering about, talk about, well, what do I do with this? It's not a confessional that, you know, I ate popcorn and candy and chips last night after I had a fight with my boyfriend. It's about, what do you do when I'm sponsoring somebody and they said whatever it was they said? How do you answer the, I ate a cookie in an email? You know, I usually write back, why are you telling me this, or why, or, you know, because I want them to get to, you know, because a lot of times we get through the steps, we know it's not about the food, it's about the behavior. We're really clear on that, and then we go back to cookies are bad and celery's good. So, you know, I'm like, and you know, when somebody says I had a cookie, it's like, okay, so why are you telling me that? Why do you feel you need to say that out loud, you know, and try to help them get back to, it's about the eating. Well, I ate a cookie because I was whatever, you know, and that's what's important. It's that stuff that blocks us from God, not cookies. So, yeah, we don't talk about that kind of stuff and share that in meetings, but.
Yeah, so actually you don't have sharing.
Like no, we don't have sharing meetings. Mm-mm. Share with your sponsor if there's something you need to say. I don't need to share it in a place where I just need to dump. I need to share it with somebody who's going to say, okay, what could you have done differently? You know, you were screaming at your kids. Well, where did that go? What went wrong before you got to the point where you were screaming at your kids? Okay. Is that it? All right. Yes?
I've been thinking about, have you any experience using the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action?
I've never heard the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. I've heard people talk a lot about action plans, or it's a program of action, or... acceptance, but I've never.
I have been. I had them from the book. What is it called? Courage to Change from Al-Anon.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's a part of the blue book.
You know, I had all kinds of books, all kinds of literature. OA literature, Hazleton literature, all kinds of stuff. This is the only one I use now. And a lot of them have a lot of good information in them, but sometimes things are taken out of context. I don't even read the stories in the back of the book. I read the first 164 pages. Like somebody will say, you know, if you have a resentment for somebody, pray for that person for, is it 2 weeks, I think the book says. That's somebody's own personal experience. It's a really nice thing to do. Prayers are great. I love prayers and I love praying for people, but that's not the program of recovery. The actual resentment prayer, a page I know, it's on there. It's... we pray for ourselves. We ask God to help us, not them, show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And it goes on, and then God saved me from being angry. That's the resentment prayer.
And that's page what?
66. It starts at the bottom of 66, 67.
In the English.
Yes.
To follow that up, that means that you only use the big book, not the 12 and 12 away pamphlets, or nothing else at all. Only this, as simple as it is, and not reading the other things, or
I don't.
The other things.
I don't, because, and I also, I don't hand out notes to people about here's what you need to do when you do the four step. The further we get. From the, no, there's one little paragraph that from Cliff that I pass on, but the further we get from the big book, we get into interpretations. So if I stick with this, this is the only book that was written based on the experience of those who had recovered. There are a lot of books that were written on a lot of good ideas, and there's nothing wrong with them. I didn't find my solution there, and I couldn't help other people when I was using that stuff. And I like simple. I can complicate it. You can probably tell from me I start talking and ramble and ramble. So you give me a lot more stuff in my head, and I mean, you know, I can go off on a tangent. I do much better with just simple and basic, and I'm being reminded of time. Sure.
It sounds to me like it's become a holy book, you know, like a kind of the Bible. And I'm really confused with that, because I think when I read OA literature, I also have the sense that this is a message from God, or as I understand him. So I don't really feel that it's just thinking things that OA gives to me, because I get the connection with OA literature in another way than I do with alcoholics. I have it's much easier for me to understand the concepts through OA words about food and how, and I think I act differently when I'm doing the food thing than when I'm with alcohol, because it's changed my behavior in a totally different way when I'm drunk compared to when I eat.
This book, for me, has a program that works to recover from compulsive eating. When I read it, I'm not thinking about alcohol. And the program of recovery is 20 pages from 60, doesn't matter. It's in 20 pages. All of the stuff about alcoholism is about the disease in the beginning of the book, and then it has the program of recovery and 10, 11, and 12 in 20 pages. You know, what we need to do to live this program. What's important is not, and I have somebody that I sponsor who wants to get it right. Well, I have several people that I sponsor, and I was like this too. I want to get it perfect, I want to get it right, and I'm reciting the book and quoting the book, and it's all about the book. What's important, and one of the things that I really want to get at today, is what it is that we're trying to get to. What it is that, you know, the first step's about. What it is the second and third and all of the steps are about. Those are not words from the book. That's what my understanding that's been passed down from the founders, you know, that's what it was about. I asked somebody this morning who's done a four-step, and we've all done, you know, some of us have done many four-steps, but there's only one thing you need to learn from doing a four-step. Now, there's lots of things that may be beneficial in life. There's lots of insight that we can get about ourselves. But in terms of the program of recovery, it's very, very simple. There's one concept that we have to see, and we have to see it absolutely. And the book says a long conversation. Now, I've done a long conversation over two full days with people to spew out all of this stuff. And I haven't gotten that one clear thing that I needed to know. I've done four steps in under a half an hour with people that get it like that because I'm following the directions. So I think it's not that there isn't good stuff in lots of places. In terms of this program of recovery, this is the book that simply gives me a simple set of directions to follow that were written based on the experience of the first 100 who it worked for. And it's not about, just like, you know, it's 3 to 11, is the program of recovery is the same, regardless of whether it's alcohol, drugs, compulsive eating, gambling, sex, love, you know, it doesn't matter. Codependency, it doesn't matter what the problem is. The 3 to 11 is the same. And we can take it and we can enhance it. But for me, it didn't need enhancing. I've had all the enhancements. And I tried to help people with the enhancements, and it wasn't working. When I just go back to the simple program of recovery, following the precise, concise directions, it works. That's all I can only share my experience, because that's all I got.
Are you only a compulsive reader? Because I have more addictions. This really works at one of my addictions. I'm totally not in my OA. Am I doing something wrong with my connection with God? Since it's the same book, I'm using for the same things, just enough.
You have to understand the problem to apply the solution. So that's maybe part of it. We can talk more privately. As far as my own experience, I used to go to AA and identified as an alcoholic. I went to CODA and Al-Anon, and I told you just this much about my relationships. I didn't know how to have relationships. And, you know, people talk about people pleasing and all of that stuff. I fit. Once I got clarity with this, well, first of all, for me, and I think, and I've seen it happen with others, and I think it's true, for so many, particularly women, this is one of my broad generalizations. Not everybody fits it, you know, take it or leave it. This is from me. Many women who find themselves as alcoholics started out as compulsive eaters, and even drug addicts. They started out in their teens. They discovered they could control their weight better with drugs and alcohol and stop eating. So it's a continuation of the disease. It's like going from potato chips to candy to fudge to, you know. It's just a continuation of the disease. When I recovered and the problem was removed, all of a sudden, I didn't identify. I had been sent to Alcoholics Anonymous by one of my early sponsors who said, go find out the answer to your question. They have 20 questions. Six of them I answered yes right away. Six I answered no right away. And the rest of them I didn't want to answer yes to. And I think they say if you can answer yes to 1, 2, 3, I don't know what it is, you qualify. So I qualified according to that. But I'm not an alcoholic. I rarely drink. I mean, in the past 10 years, maybe I've had 3 glasses of wine. I don't know. Yes?
I was just thinking that some of these things might be more clear after we've been through this.
Okay. So. Okay. Yeah, we're... So, okay, the first conversation. And... What I think we need to do, there's one other point I didn't get to. What I want to do is go through with, I'm going to talk about the first conversation a little bit. We'll do a first conversation. We'll go through taking somebody through the steps, and then I'm going to go back and tell you what I did. And I think that's important when we're sponsoring somebody. I don't want somebody sitting there taking notes as I'm taking them through the steps and remembering what I said and what I did and all of that. I just want them to experience it. This is another one of my broad generalizations. A difference between alcoholics and compulsive eaters. For the most part, not everybody fits this, but alcoholics care less what you tell them to do. They do what they want. Compulsive eaters, on the other hand, when those alcoholics don't do their homework, we're doing it for them and giving it to them. We follow directions, we follow the rules. You know, I like to call myself a rule breaker because I break rules when I know I can get away with it, to prove that I'm not this, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, but we turn our work in early to get the extra credit points. We live our lives in our head, thinking, analyzing, figuring it out. I don't want you figuring out the steps. I want you to just go through them, follow directions, do what I say, and what I say is coming out of the book. It's not me. I'm just passing on the directions. Do it. Then after you do it and you experience what you need to experience, we're going to go back and talk about what happened, so that you understand what just happened to you, and then we'll go back and learn how to do it so that you can then carry the message to others. And it takes a long time. We're not going to get all the way through it, and we're not all going to be professional at the end of the day. Because I still got a lot to learn, and I couldn't get you there without doing it myself. So one of the things I did last night, and I owe you all amends, is I jumped really quickly when Josephine volunteered. And prior to that, there were several other people that had talked about it. Somebody came up and gave me some feedback after the meeting. So I'm sorry. What we're going to do, and I'm praying that this works, because I don't know how it's going to work. God's gonna make this happen. Oh, and for anybody that wants to talk to me directly, if you have Skype, if you have email, we'll make it work. I also have something for you that I brought. I brought a coin just as a token. It's a U.S. coin, because that's where I'm from, and they have English writing on it. Please take one. I think we've got enough for everybody. Last night I wasn't so sure I did, and business cards are in there, so you can get me at my Skype address, and maybe you can start them, Gita. And you know, for those of you, if it doesn't work out, we're going to figure out whether it's during lunch, during dinner, through Skype to work with everybody. So, first conversation. It's in the book. 91 to 93 are the key parts, but you don't have it in English.
We actually have some English versions in pocket size.
It's 10, 11, and 12. So step 10.
10, 11.
I'm sorry, it's step 12 in working with others. And it's not so much so important that you're reading with me.
And it was 9-1 in the
English. Yes. I mean, it's the whole chapter of working with others, but that first conversation. So when somebody calls you and says, hey, will you be my sponsor, or I have this problem, you're going to have a conversation with them. What you're going to do is you're going to talk about compulsive eating. Oh, okay, sure. Sure. Okay, 5-minute break. Go.